Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time at a2zen.fm, and we archive these radio programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. So we encourage you to check out our guests. We are linked to them, and check out what they have to offer. If it resonates with you, hey, go for it. We're going to talk today, I think it's going to be a fun interview, about gambling, so to speak, in a manner of speaking. We're going to be talking with the author of Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. And his name is Joseph Gallenberger. And Joseph, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Sure, my pleasure, Richard.
You know, when I first heard the title, I thought, no, I don't. This really doesn't fit. We don't talk about gambling and Vegas and what have you. But I do have to say that after talking further, I realized that this actually rolls right up our alley. I have to say too that one of the things that I chuckle about every time I hear commercials for various casinos and what have you, gambling establishments, they have a tagline at the very end that says, "Gamble, please gamble responsibly." And I thought, of all of the oxymorons there are to use in the context of a commercial to get people to come out to your establishment, that is one of them, like military intelligence, as some would say, because gambling is the least responsible thing there is to do. And yet, when you talk about creating miracles, abundance, and health, a lot of people are trying to do that, and they will go to Vegas to try to do that. And they'll probably leave with less than what they had, if nothing of what they took with them. So let's talk a little bit about this. First, Las Vegas, of course, you know, I've been there once. And I've been on the Strip, and I've been into some of the casinos. And this was back when I was maybe 33, 34 years old, if that, maybe a little older. And I drove there and was staying in a place off the Strip, and I walked over and walked up and down and went up in that tall spire thing they've got. And I was quite mesmerized, but I never gambled. I never put a penny down or in a slot machine or at a gambling table. But I'm guessing that there is a certain element of, and maybe the word gambling is the wrong word to use.
Well, you might be right. It's,
in our lives,
from my point of view, we all gamble every time we cross the street.
True.
And, if we have children, get married, we're taking risks.
Yes.
And the risk is how we learn and grow, and how iPods and everything else is developed. And so we just use Vegas as a very fast and clear feedback device about how to create the right energy and focus using the energy of the heart, believe it or not, and high focused concentration with intention let go to manifest what you'd like in life in all kinds of areas. But the slot machines or dice, the feedback is within seconds, and so you can learn much more quickly.
Well, you use you've been studying a particular technique that I'd like to dive into as well in this context, psychokinesis.
Yes.
Explain what that is to our listeners.
Some people refer to it as telekinesis. It's the same thing. It's the idea that as human beings, we have the potential to affect physical matter reality with our consciousness, our mind, our energy. And so it results in things such as instant healing of the physical body, the bending metal and plastic with your mind, growing seeds in your hand in 5 minutes, lighting light bulbs without plugging them into the wall, and rolling dice in patterns and influencing computers so that you can influence slot machines. Many different kinds of manifestations of that all would be considered psychokinesis.
Well, certainly the various casinos around the country and around the world wouldn't like that much, because it's always said that it's set up for the house always to win. I mean, you might win a little if you know when to stop, but if you're trying to break the bank, that's not going to happen, because the rules are set up for the house to win. I mean, it's just the odds are not in your favor.
Yes, we play with those odds, the statistics, so mm-hmm. we have hits that are as high as 1.6 billion to one by chance, in roulette. We've had slots that are $200 million to one by chance. But we're playing with very little bits of money. It's just to pay attention, and it's the way to keep score. We're not trying to kill a house. And they like a good house will like winners as well as losers because the winners create good cheer, bring other people in, and inspire them. So since we're just learning, and this is kind of a black belt in psychokinesis, if you will, the first day we're doing energy preparation, learning about the game, meditating. The second day we go down, we have tables reserved just for us. And the first session usually isn't very pretty because people are trying to stay in a very loving heart space and at the same time do this left brain game with all these complex rules. So we, as we call it, plant a few seeds. Second session, we usually break even. Third session, we win a little. Fourth session, perhaps a little more. And then we're done for the three-day workshop. So it's not like we go in and kill them for millions of dollars.
This is a learning experience, not an effort to fund your child's college education.
That's correct.
Well, now, I participated in a class years ago where, and maybe you know the name of this. For some reason, the name of this technique escapes my brain right now, my memory. But it was where, and this was with a group of mostly blind and visually impaired people, students, if you will, of which I was one at the time, where we were given an envelope. And in that envelope, we were told at the very least that there was probably a photograph in it.
Okay.
We would never touch the envelope. We would never come in physical contact with it. We would scan over it.
Yeah.
And whatever images came to mind most likely were the images in that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I did it, I was astounded at how close I was to what the images were in that. I don't know if this is even along the same lines of some other form of kinesis.
They are related because it would be considered another psychic ability. Most people would call that clairsentience, clear knowing, or clairvoyance, clear seeing. The scientific term is remote viewing, being able to get information with no regard to the time or distance. And what we see is when somebody learns one psychic ability, such as the ability to bend spoons with your mind, usually all other psychic abilities go up and are easier to do. So when we're in Vegas, besides the psychokinesis influencing things, we also have intuition go from mild hunches to knowing to solidly seeing which reality will be next, which is very useful if it's, say, the reality of which number would come up on the dice next, etc. And that world's best remote viewer that I know also can take a huge steel serving spoon and bend it such that you can't even identify it as a spoon anymore unless you x-rayed it. And I guess the most famous psychokinesis person is Uri Geller, and he would bend metal, but also many people don't know that he was an excellent remote viewer, this clairvoyant sense. So if you had a picture in an envelope for him of a cluster of grapes, he could draw each grape in the correct position and the stem going the right way. That precise at times when he was at his best. So the psychokinesis and the remote viewing do go together, but they're a little bit different but related.
Right. And I remember, too, hearing a story about a study that was done specifically dealing with painters where they had group A and group B. I guess they had a control group and what have you. And the first group was given a painting, and it was placed on the easel, and they were to reproduce it. The second group was given the exact same painting, but it was turned upside down.
Yeah.
And the group that came closest to reproducing it was the second group that saw it up, because they had no points of reference. It didn't make any sense to them, so they went abstract of sorts.
Yes, that points to really the mind can get in the way, because the mind is related to ego.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind is useful to set a goal or a target, but it doesn't know how to roll dice in patterns or affect slot machines or any of the things we're talking about. And so that's why in the book Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health, I first looked around for a very high, consistent, powerful energy that would be positive psychologically and spiritually, and it turned out the most powerful energy you can do this from is from the heart, and being a very open, loving, all-is-one, grateful space. And then the dice give you a very quick feedback. If you are in that kind of a state, you get rewarded with money quickly every couple minutes. And if you go into greed, fear, ego, trying to do it with your mind, you get punished by the money being taken away.
You know, that brings to mind something that I saw just the other day in reference to what you're talking about, in terms of the type of reinforcement that you're given determines what your next move is going to be, because your state of mind may very well shift. And this person had basically was given this sort of this mantra that was a twist on it doesn't get any better than this. They were saying each time, how much better can it get than this? And it was like the equivalency of they found a penny, and then they found a quarter, and then a dollar, and then $100, and then they made the statement, well, it doesn't get any better than this, and it was over.
Yes, yes. So it points to the importance of your belief system and what you say to yourself. And so many of our, you know, our best rollers might say something like, every roll makes me stronger, versus how long can this last?
Let's talk about the electromagnetic machine that we are. And you mentioned, of course, the heart.
Yes.
And I've been hearing on this program from some of my guests about some of the research that's been done that is beginning to verify that the heart is actually the seat of emotion. Science is actually being able to verify that.
Not only a seat of emotion, but there's a lot of data showing that it's a seat of consciousness.
Yes. So how is it that our modern day technologies, if you will, how is it that they are affecting, influencing, or interfering with the electromagnetic machine, if you will, or being that we are, in terms of our ability to accomplish some of the quite miraculous things that your students and others have been able to accomplish?
And again, we have to watch belief. So
Okay.
If one was a smoker, I would rather them say, this is healthy for my body, then this will kill me.
Right.
In the way we're talking. It looks like we have a huge increase in the electromagnetic fields from cell phones, radio shows, TV, Wi-Fi, all kinds of things bombarding us. Much of the scientific data at this point suggests that that's not particularly a good thing for long-term physical health. It may be part of just this whole new area where everything is quickened and people are, you know, it's very hard to separate out. People are into such much greater ability to share ideas through internet, but I think also psychically, that what we see, for example, I have a program that I developed from Monroe Institute called MC Squared, Manifestation and Creation Squared. It came off my Vegas work. And when we started that program 10 years ago, it was tough to get somebody to bend a spoon, and maybe half the group could do simple bends. Now we often get 100% of the group doing very complex bends with heavy metal. Everything seems to be a little easier in this area. And again, I just don't have the expertise to relate it completely to the electromagnetic field changes. But I would guess, since we are electromagnetic beings, there is a relationship. I think the heart is being proven by organizations like HeartMath to be able to set a good health point for the mind and the body. And what I use in my courses, my home study course in creation, the Vegas Adventure courses, is a technology called HemiSync, which you listen to on headphones, which tends to bring left and right brain into better balance and quiets the left brain. That allows the heart to speak more. and become a brain we're also listening to, if you will. And I think that's a great antidote to some of the electromagnetic bombardment we're getting.
To me, this is all very fascinating because it does start to begin the process of our understanding of what we can, I think I'm about to commit a faux pas here, of what we can and can't do. Because one of the questions that I usually save for the end of the program with my guests, I'm going to pose here and I'll let you elaborate on it in the context of Inner Vegas, which is the title of the book of my guest, Joseph Gallenberger. It's Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. And that is, how powerful are we as human beings?
I think we're unlimited. I think we're just beginning to tap the surface. I'm looking for a new laptop right now. And I went to the store today, and they say, oh, for $10 more, you can get a whole terabyte of storage extra. And I also read last night when I was looking that initially there was 3.5, I think, kilobytes of data stored on a hard drive that took 24-inch platters in the size of two refrigerators just to get that amount of storage.
Wow.
We're now getting used to that type of technology, big bang, if you will,
yeah.
Of tremendous growth. I think in the next 10 years we're going to see it in consciousness. And I've seen people heal illnesses instantly that were, you know, like a tumor wrapped around the chest wall, confirmed by CAT scan. Next day it's just water. So in the area of healing, in the area of the manifesting things into life, I've seen miracle after miracle. And I think we are a miracle, even the miracle of the human hand. We swim, to me, in a sea of miracles. A lot of them are so present we consider them ordinary. But if you look at the human hand, nobody can even duplicate that yet.
What is it? There are 212 bones in the human foot, something like that?
Yes.
And that, quite honestly, I guess I've heard it said that if you break one, it's going to stay broken the rest of your life because there's no way they can go in because there's just too many and they're too fine and too fragile in the context. I thought that was rather interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When we start taking a look at how we can transform our world, as this program is sort of, I don't want to say designed to do, but we certainly are encouraging people to look at new ways of thinking and believing and living, for that matter, looking for those new paradigms for a new world. What are some of the things that you have been able to observe? You've primarily focused on, it's more than just a metaphor, certainly, but in this sense of the inner Vegas in terms of risking. And I actually like that word better than gambling, you know.
Yeah.
It says a little bit more, I think, and takes away the onus. But in terms of that aspect of risking and being willing to risk, to transform one's life, you talked about the process of mentally or energetically preparing to begin that process. Can you elaborate further on that and maybe even give us novices or maybe people who've heard this for the first time an awareness of, okay, where do we begin? Because I want to change myself and I want to change the world around me so that everybody can benefit. Everybody can live a wonderful, miracle-filled life.
Right. So one thing that separates me out from somebody like Yuri, I guess, would be I don't claim to be special. I think all of this is very accessible to most of us. Much like learning to play the piano, you know, I think everybody can learn how to hammer out Happy Birthday. Not everybody will be a concert pianist. But the good news on this stuff is at the level of being able to hammer out a psychokinesis Happy Birthday, you can really enhance your life in the community around you. In the last 10 years, one of the things I've seen is people coming to my workshops rather than coming because they want to personally gain through manifesting better. Now they're coming saying, I want to be able to help my community. So that's very exciting to me. The idea of opening the heart can be as simple. Heart Math has an exercise where you just put your hand over your physical heart, and it tends to bring your awareness from your head and over ideation into your heart. We, again, use the HemiSync meditations, and they start at $20, you know, downloadable online, maybe even cheaper, to bring the brain into a whole brain learning state, to let go of fear, to relax, and to open up to higher energies, higher messages. That can be really important. One thing I see that a lot of, quote, New Age people and spiritual people have trouble with is they're very good-hearted and they have very good intention to help the world, but they're not grounded, meaning they don't fully accept being on the planet, which with all its trials, tribulations, craziness, trivia, pettiness. And you need to be fully here in the here and now in order to do this kind of powerful effect on physical, because if you're not attached fully to the physical, you can't use your high spirit energy to affect it. So grounding is part of this process. And then, you know, what is possible? I don't know, you know. I was in Vegas. I'd taught all day, was very tired, and just wanted to be by myself in the corner of the casino and hide. And I had a goal of getting a royal flush in hearts on a poker machine, which is 160,000 to one by chance, just as a proof that the heart is a great energy. Sat down, a couple group members found me, being that they were more psychic at that point. And I had a choice. I could have said, go away, I'm finished training for the day. I could have said, sure, sit down, but not mean it. But instead, I genuinely opened my heart in that second, said, join me, and really meant it. And the third pull was the Royal Flush and Hearts. Made $4,500, which was nice. And having them there, they hugged me and took my photograph, and we laughed. It was better than if I had been alone. And so it's this continually choosing to go into the heart. I'll give you an example that's maybe, you know, bad things still happen if you want to call them bad. So I had a kitty cat I really loved, and I watched as she got savaged by three dogs who came from the neighborhood, and she died in my arms. And I went to find the neighbor. I had never met him before, and talked to him about this. And the first thing I did when I met him was to give him a hug. He had never met me, and say we have something soulful to talk about. The old reaction in the old paradigm would have been victim, anger, justice, retribution, those kind of things. Mm. And instead, going into that heart space, it was very powerful and helpful in terms of how he managed his animals in the future. It was more positive for me and for him. So it's this continually choosing the heart and then experiencing the miracle that the heart can give you. And that could be something you love. Like I thought one day, gee, I'd like to take my wife to Paris. She's never been. And immediately I got an email saying, would you like to train in France, which I'd never done before. So I thought, oh, that'd be cool. And I'd like to go over first class round trip for free. By the end of the day, I had free round trip tickets for free, first class. Mm. And I always put out this or something better. So when I got there, it ended up, we had a beautiful vacation after doing the workshop, and I got offers to train 10 more places in Europe, and one of them I ended up with was in Germany. In the middle of the workshop, as we yelled bend to bend the metal, people's heart chakras contracted, and they got into a memory of the Holocaust, and we did this deep healing for a couple hours of the energies around that. So those are the things where you put yourself in service for the good and for the good of everyone, that you get what you want and also you help others.
Joe Gallen,
so it's a nice flow, you know?
It absolutely is. I love that. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back from our break. Joe Gallenberger is my guest, the Inner Vegas, and it's also innervegas.com. You can go to the website and find out more. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your story.
Well, Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Joe Gallenberger and Inner Vagus, and a very neat book and conversation, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. I find it interesting, too, Joe, that when I have listened to programs where there's an intuitive or a psychic, if you will, and the callers come in, and it always seems to be all the same. Everybody's wanting the same answers to the same questions that they've been asking for, if not decades, centuries maybe.
Okay.
And they want the same answers. They want to know the future. This is not about a fortune telling, let alone trying to manipulate the future. This is just from the stories that you just shared with us in at the end of our last segment. I'm curious as to the neighbor and the relationship you have with him now.
Excellent. And so, you know, it started a friendship versus an enemyship. to me, rather than manipulating, this is to understand our role at co-creating and our future, and to co-create our future as a community and as a world. Today we could all choose to be more compassionate and generous, and that's going to change our future. So it's a place of dominion, not domination. It's a place of moving into understanding that our birthright, we're the big X between heaven and earth. We combine heavenly energies and earth energies. And some religions talk about we're made in the image and likeness. So that as we begin to tap that, it is a power, but it's a power that is really from the heart and designed to do good. And if you go a different direction, try to manipulate like black magic or something, the thing just seems to peter out, as well as maybe have some negative percussions back at you. So we're talking about a very positive dominion place, community place, creating together a better world. And it's fine to want a Mercedes, let's say, because for most people they're of goodwill, and after one or two Mercedes they're going to get bored with that and say, what else can I do that would be helpful to other people? You know, people go into learning karate to try to punch somebody's lights out, and they learn perhaps to be very peaceful, centered, and that if they don't avoid a conflict, that's the loss. So we can start where we are. And desire, to my mind, is good. And desire for a car, a soulmate, a house, if handled properly, can take you on a positive spiritual journey.
You know, it seems like it's so easy. It's so simple. And yet, every time I get in my car and I get ready to get out on the roadways, and I'm feeling really good, and then somebody does something that rubs me the wrong way, and suddenly I am thrown out of that state that I was in.
Yes. It's easier to say than do, that's for sure. If you're a regular meditator, like the HemiSync technology, making that pretty easy, just listen to it on headphones. If you begin to practice, but still, you know, I have three teenage daughters. Now they're, I guess, a little older. Two of them got married this year so far. But this idea of staying centered and grounded can be a real challenge. And one of the things my home study course, Sync Creation, does, one thing we try to do in Vegas, they do in Monroe Institute too, is to learn techniques to let go of fear in all its forms. That could be being irritated with somebody driving who just cut you off. It can be boredom, confusion, fear manifests in lots of ways. But really to clear fear, feelings of lack, feelings of guilt, and to raise your energy quite high. Many of the people I deal with don't listen to broadcast news anymore, for example, particularly before going to bed, because it's just too much murder, too much negativity, and we are social creatures. So to hold your space, if you can surround yourself by beauty, of the beauty of music, beauty of nature, wonderful people that are positive, all that will help. I think everybody on the planet has had that feeling of leaving the house in a pretty good mood. You know, it's the old, Lord, I'm doing really great here, but in a few minutes I'm going to get up, and then I'm going to really need your help. You know, yeah, that's true as part of our human condition.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I probably have uttered that prayer in some form or another. I'm sure we all have. When we are going about our daily lives, are there, and again, I realize that there are programs that are available for people to hook up with, but are there in particular techniques, phrases, words, mantras that we might be able to use on an initial basis?
Sure. I have some favorites. One that I developed has an interesting story to it. I was wanting to sell a house and asked for a clear sign whether I should do that. And somebody took my quote, put it on a sign, and sent it to me by mail without me asking. So the next day after asking for a sign, I got a literal physical sign I could hang on the wall. And the phrase that I use, and I use it often, is fear is expensive, love is priceless, choose wisely. And I try to, you know, reset my day when it's before a critical phone call, before anything, with fear is expensive, love is priceless, choose wisely. So you live your day choosing love. Another one personally that I need is patience sweetens passion, because I tend to be an impatient guy. And so just for me, it's very helpful to remember, you know, to be patient, and that can actually sweeten the process, because impatience implies a lack of trust in the goodness of the universe.
Mm, that's a good point, and I think I'm right there with you in regarding patience. It's interesting how we have those moments in our life, Joe, where, boy, we're just in the zone. We are on it. And I mean, well, 7.5 years ago, when my wife and I moved here to Santa Barbara, California, we both had lost our jobs. And my wife comes to me, and this was on March 1st of that year, 2006. And she says, I'm scared. I feel like we're on the edge of a precipice and I don't know what to do. Well, I had lost my job due to a layoff because the station was sold to another company who was not going to keep any of us. And she had quit her job due to a very hostile work environment. And so there we are watching TV, and I'm sitting there just calm as can be. And it's like, wow, I look back on that going, part of me was like, you're an idiot. You should have been scared out of your mind because neither of you had jobs. But I wasn't. I said, well, I've interviewed hundreds of people, and I've gone to workshops and seminars and read books and this and that and the other. And I'll tell you the one message that always comes back, and this kind of goes to what you were saying, is say when you're on the edge of a cliff, you do two things. You jump and you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved here on a wing and a prayer, and sold the house that we were living at. And 2 weeks after we'd sold the house, the market in Phoenix fell through.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we had no idea this was happening.
Yes.
But we made that choice. We made the move. And then, of course, another thing that came to mind was this thing came to my mind that, you know, you didn't have to wait for both your jobs to end to do this. You could have done this at any time along the way.
Sure. Sometimes we need a push.
Sometimes we need a push. And someone told me also about timing, too. Maybe it wasn't the right time to do it. And that was the impetus and why I didn't feel any fear. And so whenever I now start to, kind of drift away from that, I just go back to that same thing. Okay, trust the universe. The universe has not let you down yet, and it won't ever, as long as you trust.
I know, Richard, in my life I've lost a lot of more money, opportunity, relationships, and everything else you can think of through fear than through trust. Every time I've trusted, I've done better than every time I've been in fear. And it's tough to go against that programming sometime. So, you know, it starts when I say to people, oh, what I do in Vegas, in the Inner Vegas book, and they go, oh, I don't gamble. And I go, man, you know, you got married, you cross the street, you invest in the stock market, you bought a home, you have a job, you're a high roller. You're risking all the time. And, you know, it's just a question of how you're going to do that. We don't teach risk in high school. We don't teach people how to risk intelligently, how to have the correct emotional energy around it. Especially, you know, it's tough. Like, say you go to a doctor, not me or you, but somebody unnamed, on a Friday, and they say, we're going to biopsy this, and we'll let you know in a week the results. It's going to be a human natural reaction to go into deep fear, but that's not going to help you. And you can learn how to let go of that fear, move into high positive energies, high heart energies, and you may have a miracle when the doc goes back next time, he says, what are you doing here? Because we see nothing wrong.
Mm.
But if you go down the fear chute, it's likely not to be as positive.
No, that's true. That is very true. And I've had situations where, when in 96, when I, that's 1996, folks, when I, it's weird living beyond, through a turn of a century, I have to tell you that.
Yeah.
It's an unusual feeling. But anyway, in 96, when I started to lose a vision in my right eye, I went to see my ophthalmologist, and he says, well, we could do nothing and it'll probably self-correct itself, which I thought, I think he was just saying that it's a humorous thing because I was losing it. The site, that is, due to cataracts.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can go in and we can do a lens implant. We'll take out some of the cataract material and so forth. And there's a 50-50 chance that you could lose all of your sight. And I thought, my first thought was, well, then let's do it, because if I'm going to lose it now, then I can start adjusting sooner and get on with my life. Well, it turned out very well. I actually found myself in 2006, 10 years later, never dreamed of doing this really. Driving through and on Los Angeles freeways to our new home here in Santa Barbara. And
that's great.
And you think, and of course that's a big risk. But I think that the using the word gamble, I think, opens the door to the conversation with people when you use that example of, well, you do this, you do that, you do the other, you know, you're a high roller kind of thing. And it opens that wonderful conversational door. So that word is charged just enough for you in this context. You obviously didn't, there's obviously had to have been something of a catalyst that drove you in this particular direction. I mean, you're a psychotherapist and you've been working on these techniques and so forth for many years. So tell us a little bit about how this all came about and what led you down this particular path.
Well, as a psychotherapist, I began to look for technologies that would help people get better faster.
Mm-hmm.
And this HemiSync brainwave patterning CDs that I mentioned really helped with anxiety, depression, etc. So that was part of it. Second was I had a brother who I loved dearly, and he was handsome, responsible, hardworking, honest, all of that. He just couldn't get it together in his work life, and he committed suicide. And I began to wonder very deeply, how can it be that somebody so good, so deserving, has such a poor result? And it really came to me that he could not accept his power, and he could not see himself as deserving. So I began to look at that in greater detail. And it led to this whole area of how we create reality, how do we manifest, can we change our set point about what we think we can get in this world. And then it was pretty natural for me to use the very high meditation energies as a way to do that, because I'd been a trainer by then, and I guess at this point I've been a trainer for over 22 years with Monroe Institute, and they're world famous for no dogma, but teaching technology in terms of how you can control your consciousness. So all those things converged. But it was really to answer this question of why good people are suffering and can they do anything to make it better?
Obviously, because through our suffering, we grow. It's how we develop character, Joseph.
Well, that's one way, but I'm also, you know, I was in a body cast for 6 months, long lead brace for 18, and traction for 6 months after a motorcycle accident when I was 21. From there, I say, small lessons, please. I'm willing to pay attention, and I'm willing to learn through abundance and joy. And I'll tell you what we see in Vegas and these other workshops is people can learn just as well through pleasure compared to pain if they're paying attention. Mm. Most people, when they're having a good day, they just take it for granted and don't look at why it was a good day.
Yeah.
You know, we try to say, okay, what are you doing right here? Why? And is it repeatable? And get people to see that their positive thoughts, et cetera, have created that good day.
Interesting. And so I'm curious as to your personal success rate at experiencing consecutive good days.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I've done a lot of radio. Nobody's asked me that. I would say I could go months. I live in a beautiful area. I have a job that's very interesting and meaningful to me. I got friends around the world, a beautiful soulmate, animals that I love. I live in a county with 250 waterfalls. So I have a nice circumstance. My physical health is great. But, you know, within that, now, you know, in the way I'm saying it, it doesn't mean perfectly happy every minute of that day. But that at the end of the day, feeling very good, very satisfied about what was accomplished, and having noted many delights and beauties along the way through the day.
There's a great scene from the movie, the original movie City Slicker, and it's basically where Mitch does exactly the same thing. He runs through his list of things he's grateful for that he has in his life, and he says, "And this is my best day." And I had one of those back in 1993, and I don't mean just the one, but I had a day that I could look at and say, and it was actually after an evening of confrontation, where the next day I was left to my own devices. This was on a camping trip, and I was able to basically do whatever I wanted while I was there, and so I went through doing the things that I love to do. I put the boat in the water that I had helped to refabricate with the gentleman, with one of the gentlemen that I was camping with, rode it back and forth up and down the lake and had a great time. I went back to the campsite and I only cooked up two hot dogs in this giant fire that I had created. And then ended the day with both buddies returning, and we had Frank's and beans or ham and beans with I forget exactly what, if it was Jack Daniels and beer or what have you. And we weren't getting wasted, but it was just a nice, it was a wonderful day. And I actually could look at that and say, then this is my best day.
Yes, that's kind of a Buddhist definition of suchness. Just sounds like you are in every moment present and enjoying. And it's, that's a blessing, yeah.
It's one of those things that is so striking to me because I was then propelled into the next day, and I was still able to hold on to that in that second in that second day after, which sort of surprised me because, you know, it's like you say, I mean, it's not one of those things where you're in that euphoric happiness that, you know, that you know, there are a lot of people in institutions that have that euphoric happiness, which is why they're in the institution. But that doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong with them. They just choose to be happy regardless of circumstance. And so, you know, I went through these series of days and weeks and I probably started to forget about that concept of, this is my best day and now this is my best day and so forth. And yet I'd have to say that I can look back from that point forward and say, man, and I've had a lot of them. I have had a lot of them. And I can go through the same kind of gratitude list of gratitudes for my life in terms of my partner and the animals and the place in which I live. And I mean, I'm living right on the coast here, and I love it because I've been wanting to get to the ocean for I don't know how long after living in the, you know, the hot desert of Phoenix. You know, so I'm thinking that gratitude seems to play what a fairly significant role in all of this.
I'd say it's a terrific plays a terrific role and needs to be genuine. It can't be, you should be grateful for the socks that Aunt Nellie gave you for Christmas because she only had $5 and loves the color purple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that's duty. Genuine gratitude. When we do the meditations, we recommend everybody on their way up to relaxing, think of the way they're grateful, the amount of authors in their lives that they've read the words about, the amount of pets they've had, the beauty of nature, friends, what have you, so that they arrive in a place where, in meditation, where they're going to put out what they want to manifest in a state of full and complete gratitude, and whatever else they want is just the cherry on top of the sundae. Mm-hmm. Because lack manifests lack.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to feel very abundant and very blessed and very grateful before putting out a projection of what you would like tomorrow to be like, if you will.
There was an observation I made shortly after the downturn of the U.S. economy in 2008-2009, especially in relation to many, many people, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who lost their jobs. The observation was, and it was more of a question to them in a general sense, okay, you lost your job, you were laid off, but did you really like that job? And I have to wonder if more than 90 to 95% of them didn't. They just did it because it was their duty, because their father and his father and his father did it, and so I've got to carry on the tradition, not that I really like it, but it's what's expected of me. Or they get stuck. That was probably one of the biggest pieces of advice my father gave me. He says, find a job you love to do because you're going to be doing it for a long time.
Yes.
Not even considering the fact that, you know, people change careers and everything. And I've been fortunate. I've been doing this for 33, almost 34 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, there, you know, in this economic downturn, there was lots of heartache for many people, and you know, I do want to respect that.
Sure.
And respect the beliefs that may have put somebody in a situation where they felt like the burden of supporting a family was totally on their shoulders, and so they never could experiment to look for something they loved better. But once happened, you know, it's strange as a therapist, if you talk to people 5 years after a divorce, or 5 years after a job loss, often they will say, that was one of the most stressful things that happened in my life and also one of the best things, because they will feel better than they did at the time of the great transition that happened. Not everybody lands on their feet. You know, your age, your location in the culture, your skills, your circumstances. But if you, in my belief, stay positive, you have a much better chance of not only landing on your feet, but really thriving to a whole new level.
You have been able to observe the human psyche, if you will, on a one-on-one basis with specific patients over the years. I'm curious as to your observations. Are you still, well, I shouldn't say still because I don't know that you were in the first place. Are you now, and have you ever been, optimistic about our future as citizens of this planet, let alone America, for that matter?
I'm very optimistic. And when I look forward, it feels like my grandkids are going to have, and great-grandkids, you know, I feel really good about. My own children, who are in their early 20s now, they may go through some challenging times, but I think they're also still exciting times. And, you know, I look at, we don't sense motion very well. You know, if I said stand still, most people say, okay, I'm still. Well, the Earth is going around thousands of times miles an hour, and the galaxies and universe and solar system, everything moving in all different directions. We're never still.
Mm-hmm.
So this, if I look at my own life, I'm 62, I guess, 63. The race relationship change, the Berlin Wall coming down, the internet, the inventions that have happened, the progress in healthcare. I just see we're in a time of tremendous change. And sure, you know, you can argue with any part of that. You could say big pharma is, you know, causing destruction. But by and large, on anything like that, there's much more action, movement, progress. And, you know, in my lifetime, 60 years is almost nothing in the the amount of time we've been here. You know, all of recorded history would be like a millimeter of paint on top of the world's highest skyscraper compared to all the time we know that the planet's been here. And so when we go, gee, there's no change, you know, our perspective, I think, is off. We've changed tremendously in the last 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel very positive. It is crisis time, you know, but it's a time. And now the psychokinesis stuff that we've been talking about, it mm-hmm. gets pretty strange. You know, we've had people who went through this process, and their family owns large farms in the Midwest, and they can raise a nitrogen content in the soil measurable just using their mind. Well, if we learn how to do that, we don't have to use fertilizers.
Wow.
Other groups get together and clear lakes of pollution, measurable again. So as two or three gather together with these kinds of psychokinetic powers, you know, can look quite different than on our more pessimistic days.
That's extraordinary. I think as you were going through those things, I was also thinking of those, what they call gyres out in the oceans that are spinning with all of the garbage. And I thought, well, this sounds kind of strange to put it this way, but what a neat project for somebody to take on just a little at a time, go out there, start scooping some of that stuff up, figuring out what it is, and find ways of recycling it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, unless, of course, these gyres are sort of like a toilet bowl flushing down and this stuff is going down into the magma and it's just going to vaporize. I mean, we just don't know. You know, you're right. I mean, in spite of the challenging times, there are great opportunities here for us.
Yes. And I come back to, you know, the news distorts so much. My wife was at the Outer Banks in North Carolina with her two best female friends. They call it their goddess trip. They try to take once a year. And there's bad riptides out there, and they saw a guy drowning. Mm. And they went up and down the beach and gathered all these strangers, doglishes, and whatever, and made a human chain out to this man while his family on the beach watched. And the two people deepest into the water connecting with him didn't even know how to swim, and they brought him back.
Wow.
And it never reached even the papers, you know, but there's hundreds of thousands of events of absolute goodwill, altruism, caring for each other, even if we're strangers, happen every day.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up the program, and I hate to interrupt you there because we are running short on time, let me ask you a final three questions real quickly here. Who is Joseph Gallenberger?
That's me. I think a good guy who's very curious about things, who has learned a lot about the power of the human heart, and very glad to share it with other people.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Much of what we talked about in the last 10 minutes, I love to see people individually create a more private heaven on earth for themselves and their immediate family. And I love to see that taken then to enhance community life so that we can make this much more of the paradise it's designed to be.
I love that. And you've also alluded to this throughout the program, but I'll ask it directly. How powerful are we as human beings?
I'm going to quote Bob Monroe. He said, "The greatest illusion we have is mankind has any limitation." I think we're unlimitedly powerful. You know, and it's the context. You know, people often say we can't fly, for example. Well, we can learn how to build a 787 with beautiful seats and eat dinner way up in the sky, you know. So we find a way around the things that we consider limitations if we just put ourselves together here.
Joseph Gallenberger, thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing with us your story and your book, Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. It's been a great, great hour.
Thank you much, and I hope people will go to innervegas.com and learn more about it.
That's right. Innervegas.com is the website. We encourage you to check out all of the information that's available there and find out more about Joe Gallenberger. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on atozen.fm on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and the programs are archived at richarddugan.com radio shows page. Until next Saturday, love to Lal.